"Yes, it is probable," said D'Artagnan. "Gentlemen," said Athos, "a wager." "Ah, a wager," said the Swiss. "What is it?" asked the light horseman. "Stop," said the dragoon, laying his saber like a spit on the two great iron dogs which supported the fire in the chimney. "I am in it. A dripping pan here, instantly, you noodle of a landlord, that I may not lose one drop of the fat of this estimable bird." "He is right," said the Swiss. "The fat of a goose is very good with sweetmeats." "There," said the dragoon. "And now for the wager. We are listening, Monsieur Athos." "Well, Monsieur de Busigny," said Athos, "I bet you that my three comrades, Messieurs Porthos, Aramis, and D'Artagnan, and myself, will go and breakfast in the Bastion of Saint-Gervais, and that we will stay there for 1 hour by the clock, whatever the enemy may do to dislodge us." Porthos and Aramis looked at one another, for they began to understand. "Why," said D'Artagnan, stooping to Athos's ear, "you're going to get us all killed without mercy." "We shall be more certainly killed if we do not go," replied Athos. "Ah, faith, gentlemen," said Porthos, throwing himself back in his chair and twirling his moustache. "That is a fine wager, I hope." "And I accept it," said Monsieur de Busigny. "Now we must fix the stakes." "You are four, gentlemen," said Athos, "and we are four. A dinner for eight. Will that suit you?"
"Just the thing," replied Monsieur de Busigny.
"Exactly," said the dragoon.
"That will do,"
exclaimed the Swiss. The fourth auditor, who had remained silent throughout the conversation, bowed his head as a sign that he acquiesced in the proposition.
"The déjeuner of these gentlemen is ready," broke in the landlord.
"Well then, bring it here," said Athos. The landlord obeyed. Athos called Grimaud, showed him a large basket which was lying in a corner, and made him a sign to wrap up in the napkins all the eatables which had been brought. Grimaud, comprehending at once that they were going to breakfast on the grass, took the basket, packed up the eatables, put in the bottles, and took the basket up in his arms.
"But where are you going to eat this breakfast?" said the landlord. "What does it signify to you?" replied Athos, "provided you are paid for it."
And he threw two pistoles majestically on the table.
"Must I give you the change, sir?" said mine host.
"No, but add a couple of bottles of champagne, and the balance will pay for the napkins." The landlord had not made quite such a good thing of it as he at first expected, but he recompensed himself for it by palming off on his four guests two bottles of Anjou wine instead of the two bottles of champagne. "Monsieur de Busigny, will you regulate your watch by mine, or permit me to regulate mine by yours?" inquired Athos.
"At your pleasure,"
said the light dragoon, drawing from his fob a very beautiful watch encircled with diamonds.
"Half past seven,"
added he. 5:30 after seven," said Athos. "We shall remember that I am 5 minutes in advance, sir." Then, bowing to the astonished party, the four young men took the road towards the Bastion of Saint-Gervais, followed by Grimaud, who carried the basket, not knowing where he was going, and from the passive obedience that was habitual to him, not even thinking of inquiring. Whilst they were within the precincts of the camp, the four friends did not exchange a word. They were, besides, followed by the curious, who, having heard of the wager, wished to know how they would extricate themselves from the affair. But when once they had got beyond the lines of circumvallation, and found themselves in the open country, D'Artagnan, who was entirely ignorant of what they were about, thought it high time to demand some explanation. "And now, my dear Athos," said he, "do me the favour to tell me where we are going."
"You can see well enough," replied Athos. "We are going to the Bastion."
"But what are we going to do there?"
"You know very well. We are going to breakfast there."
"But why do we not breakfast at the Parpaillot?"
"Because we have most important things to tell you. And it was impossible to converse for 5 minutes in that tavern with all those troublesome fellows who come and go and continually accost us. Here, at least," continued Athos, pointing to the Bastion, "no one will come to interrupt us."
"It appears to me," said D'Artagnan, with that prudence which was so thoroughly and so naturally united with his extreme courage, "it appears to me that we could have found some retired spot, somewhere among the downs on the seashore.
where we should have been seen all four in council together, so that in a quarter of an hour the cardinal would have been informed by his spies that we were holding a consultation.
Yes, said Aramis, Athos is right. Animadvertunter in desertis.
A desert would not have been a bad place, remarked Porthos, but the difficulty is to find one.
There is no desert where a bird could not pass over one's head, or a fish jump from the water, or a rabbit run from her burrow. And I believe that bird, fish, and rabbit are all amongst the cardinal's spies. It is much better, therefore, to pursue our enterprise. Besides, we cannot now recede without disgrace. We have made a bet which could not have been foreseen, and of which I defy anyone to guess the true motive. To win it, we must remain an hour in the bastion. Either we shall or shall not be attacked. If we are not, we shall have time to talk, and no one will hear us, for I will answer for it that the walls of that bastion have no ears. If we are attacked, we will talk just the same, and shall, moreover, by defending ourselves, be covered with glory. So you see that everything is favorable to us.
Yes, said D'Artagnan, but we shall indubitably be shot.
Well, rejoined Athos, but you know very well that the bullets most to be feared are not those of the enemy.
Yet it seems to me, said Porthos, that for such an expedition we should at least have brought our muskets.
You are a simpleton, friend Porthos. Why should we encumber ourselves with a useless burden?
I do not find a good regulation musket with a dozen cartridges and a powder flask useless in front of an enemy.
Well, rejoined Athos, did you not hear what D'Artagnan said?
And what did D'Artagnan say?
Asked Porthos. D'Artagnan says that in last night's attack, as many as 8 or 10 Frenchmen were killed, and as many of the enemy.
Well?
There has not been time to strip them, has there, seeing there was something more urgent to which to attend?
Well?
Well, we shall find their muskets, powder flasks, and cartridges. And instead of 4 muskets and a dozen balls, we shall have about 15 muskets and 100 rounds of ammunition to fire.
Oh, Athos, said Aramis, you are really a great man.
Porthos bowed his head in token of acquiescence. D'Artagnan alone did not appear completely convinced. Grimaud unquestionably partook of the young man's incredulity, for seeing that they continued to march towards the bastion, which he suspected before, he plucked his master by the skirt of his coat.
"Where are we going?" he inquired by a sign.
Athos pointed to the bastion.
"But," said the silent Grimaud, still in the same dialect, "we shall leave our skins there."
Athos raised his eyes and his fingers towards heaven. Grimaud set down his basket on the ground and seated himself upon it, shaking his head. Athos took a pistol from his belt, looked at the priming, cocked it, and leveled it at Grimaud's ear. Grimaud found himself raised up upon his legs, as if by the force of a spring. Athos then beckoned to him to take up the basket and to march in front. Grimaud obeyed, so that all the poor fellow had gained by this momentary pantomime was that he had been transformed from the rear guard to the advanced guard. Having reached the bastion, the four friends looked behind them. More than 300 soldiers of every arm had assembled at the entrance of the camp, and in a separate group they saw Monsieur de Busigny, the dragoon, the Swiss, and the fourth wagerer. Athos took off his hat, raised it on the end of his sword, and waved it in the air. All the spectators returned his salutation, accompanying this act of politeness with a loud hurrah which reached the ears of the party. After this occurrence, they all four disappeared in the bastion, where Grimaud had already preceded them. 47. The Council of the Musketeers. As Athos had foreseen, the bastion was only occupied by about a dozen dead bodies, French and Rochellois.
"Gentlemen," said Athos, who had taken the command of the expedition, "whilst Grimaud prepares the table, let us begin by gathering together the muskets and ammunition. We can, moreover, converse whilst we are doing it. These gentlemen," added he, pointing to the dead bodies, "do not hear us."
"But we may, nevertheless, throw them into the ditches," said Porthos, "having first satisfied ourselves that they have nothing in their pockets."
"Yes," replied Athos,
but that is Grimaud's affair.
Well, then, said D'Artagnan, let Grimaud search them and throw them over the walls.
Not upon any account, said Athos. They may be of use to us.
These dead be of use to us? Exclaimed Porthos.
Ah, nonsense! You are going crazy, my dear friend.
Do not judge rashly, say both the gospel and the cardinal, replied Athos.
How many muskets are there, gentlemen?
12.
How much ammunition?
100 rounds.
It is quite as many as we need. Let us load our muskets. The four companions set themselves to work, and just as they had loaded the last musket, Grimaud made a sign to them that breakfast was ready. Athos indicated by a gesture that he was contented with what was done, and then pointed out to Grimaud a sort of sheltered box where he was to place himself as sentinel. But to relieve the tedium of his watch, Athos allowed him to take with him a loaf, two cutlets, and a bottle of wine.
"And now to breakfast," said Athos.
The four friends squatted upon the ground, like Turks or tailors.
"And now," said D'Artagnan, "as you are no longer afraid of being heard, I hope that you are going to let us know your secret.
I hope that I provide you at the same time both with amusement and glory, gentlemen," said Athos.
I have induced you to take a charming little excursion. Here is a most sustaining breakfast, and below there are 500 persons, as you may perceive through the embrasures, who take us for madmen or heroes, two classes of fools who very much resemble each other.
But this secret!
I saw her ladyship last night, said Athos. D'Artagnan was just conveying his glass to his lips. But at the sound of her ladyship's name, his hand trembled so that he placed his glass upon the ground in order that he might not spill its contents.
"You have seen your wife—"
"Hush, then," interrupted Athos.
"You forget, my dear fellow, that these gentlemen are not, like you, initiated in the privacies of my family affairs.
I have seen her ladyship."
"And where did that happen?" demanded D'Artagnan.
"About 2 leagues from hence, at the Red Dovecote."
"In that case, I am a lost man," said D'Artagnan.
"Not just yet," replied Athos, "for by this time she must have quitted the shores of France."
D'Artagnan breathed again.
"But after all," inquired Porthos, "who is this lady?"
"A charming woman," said Athos, sipping a glass of sparkling wine.
"Scamp of a landlord!" exclaimed he, "who gives us Anjou for champagne, and thinks we shall be deceived by the subterfuge?"
"Yes," continued he, "a charming woman to whom our friend D'Artagnan has done something unpardonable, for which she has been endeavouring to avenge herself. A month ago, by trying to get him shot, a week ago, by sending him some poison, and yesterday, by demanding his head of the cardinal."
"What? Demanding my head of the cardinal?"
cried D'Artagnan, pale with terror.
"Yes," said Porthos, "it is true as gospel, for I heard her with my own ears."
"And I also," said Aramis.
"Then," said D'Artagnan, letting his arm fall in a desponding manner, "it is useless to struggle longer. I may as well blow out my brains at once and have done with it."
"That is the last folly to be perpetrated," said Athos, "seeing it is the only one which will admit of no remedy."
"But with such enemies I shall never escape," said D'Artagnan.
"First my unknown antagonist of Meung, then De Wardes, on whom I inflicted 4 wounds, next this lady whose secret I found out, and lastly the cardinal, whose revenge I defeated."
"Well," said Athos, "and all this makes only 4, and we are 4 against 1. Vive Dieu, if we may trust to Grimaud's signs, we are now about to be engaged with a far greater number of foes. What's the matter, Grimaud? Considering the seriousness of the circumstances, I permit you to speak, my friend. But be brief, I beseech you. What do you see?"
"A troop."
"Of how many persons?"
20 men.
"What sort of men?"
16 pioneers and 4 soldiers.
"How far off are they?"
500 paces.
"Good. We shall still have time to finish this fowl, and to drink a glass of wine. To your health, D'Artagnan."
"To your health," repeated Aramis and Porthos.
"Well, then, to my health, although I do not imagine that your good wishes will be of much benefit to me."
"Bah," said Athos, "God is great, as the Mohammedans say, and the future is in his hands."
Then, having swallowed his wine and put the glass down, Athos carelessly arose, took the first musket which came to his hand, and went towards an embrasure. The three others did the same. As for Grimaud, he had orders to place himself behind them and to reload their muskets. An instant afterwards they saw the troop appearing. It came along a kind of branch trench, which formed a communication between the bastion and the town. "Mordieu," said Athos, "it was scarcely worth while to disturb ourselves for a score of fellows armed with pickaxes, mattocks, and spades. Grimaud ought to have quietly waved to them to go about their business, and I am quite convinced that they would have left us to ourselves." "I much doubt it," said D'Artagnan, "for they come forward with great resolution. Besides, in addition to the workmen, there are four soldiers and a brigadier armed with muskets."
"That is because they have not seen us," replied Athos.
"Faith," said Aramis, "I confess that I am reluctant to fire upon these poor devils of citizens."
"He is a bad priest," said Porthos, "who pities heretics."
"Upon my word," said Athos, "Aramis is right. I will give them a notice."
"What the plague are you doing?" cried D'Artagnan. "You will get yourself shot, my dear fellow."
But Athos paid no attention to this warning, and mounting on the breach, his fusee in one hand and his hat in the other,
"Gentlemen," said he, bowing courteously and addressing himself to the soldiers and pioneers, who, astonished by this apparition, halted at about 50 paces from the bastion, "gentlemen, we are, some of my friends and myself, engaged in breakfasting in this bastion. Now you know that nothing is more disagreeable than to be disturbed at breakfast. So we entreat of you, if you really have business here, to wait till we have finished our repast, or to come back in a little while. Unless, indeed, you experience the salutary desire of forsaking the ranks of rebellion and coming to drink with us to the health of the King of France."
"Take care, Athos," said D'Artagnan. "Don't you see that they are aiming at you?"
"Yes, yes," said Athos. "But these are civilians who are shocking bad marksmen, and will take care not to hit me." In fact, at that moment, four shots were fired, and the bullets whistled around Athos, but without one touching him.
Four shots were instantaneously fired in return, but with a far better aim than that of the aggressors. Three soldiers fell dead, and one of the pioneers was wounded.
"Grimaud," said Athos, from the breach, "another musket."
Grimaud obeyed immediately. The three friends had also reloaded their arms. A second discharge soon followed the first, and the brigadier and two pioneers fell dead. The rest of the troop took to flight.
"Come, gentlemen, a sortie," said Athos.
The four friends rushed out of the fort, reached the field of battle, picked up the muskets of the soldiers and the half-pike of the brigadier, and satisfied that the fugitives would never stop till they reached the city, they returned to the bastion, bearing with them the trophies of their victory.
"Reload the muskets, Grimaud," said Athos, "and let us, gentlemen, continue our breakfast and conversation. Where were we?"
"I recollect," said D'Artagnan, "you were saying that, after having demanded my head of the cardinal, her ladyship had left the shores of France."
"And where is she going?" added D'Artagnan, who was painfully anxious about the itinerary of the lady's journey.
"She is going to England," replied Athos.
"And why?"
"To assassinate the Duke of Buckingham, or to get him assassinated."
D'Artagnan uttered an exclamation of surprise and horror.
"It is infamous!" exclaimed he.
"Oh, as to that," said Athos, "I beg you to believe that I concern myself very little about it. Now that you have finished, Grimaud," continued he, "take the half-pike of our brigadier, fasten a napkin to it, and fix it on the end of our bastion, that those rebellious Rochellois may see that they are opposed to brave and loyal subjects of the king."
Grimaud obeyed without reply, and an instant afterwards the white flag floated over the heads of the four friends. A cry of joy, a thunder of applause, saluted its appearance. Half the camp was at the barriers.
"What?" said D'Artagnan. "You concern yourself but little about her assassinating Buckingham, or causing him to be assassinated. The Duke is our friend."
"The Duke is an Englishman. The Duke fights against us. Let her do, therefore, what she likes with the Duke. I care as little about him as about an empty bottle."
As Athos said this, he threw, some 15 yards before him, a bottle which he held in his hand, and from which he had just poured the last drop into his own glass. "Wait an instant," said D'Artagnan. "I do not abandon Buckingham in that manner. He gave us some very fine horses."
"And especially some beautiful saddles," added Porthos, who was then wearing the lace of his upon his cloak.
"Besides," said Aramis, "God wishes for the conversion, not death, of a sinner."
"Amen," said Athos, "and we will return to that by and by, if such is your pleasure. But that which most engaged my attention at the time, and I am sure you will understand why, D'Artagnan, was how to take from this woman a carte blanche which she had extorted from the cardinal, and by means of which she might get rid of you, and perhaps the whole of us, with impunity."
"This creature is a very demon," said Porthos, holding his plate to Aramis, who was cutting up a fowl.
"And this document," said D'Artagnan, "did it remain in her hands?"
"No, it passed into mine. I cannot say that it was without some trouble, for if I said that, I should tell a lie."
"My dear Athos," said D'Artagnan, "I must no longer count the times I owe my life to you."
"Then it was to visit her that you quitted us?" said Aramis.
"Exactly so.
And you have got the cardinal's letter?" inquired D'Artagnan.
"Here it is," replied Athos.
He took the precious paper from the pocket of his coat. D'Artagnan unfolded it with a hand, of which he did not attempt to hide the tremor, and read,
"It is by my order, and for the good of the state, that the bearer of this did that which he has now done. Richelieu."
"It is, in fact, a regular indulgence," said Aramis.
"We must destroy this paper," said D'Artagnan, who seemed to read in it his own sentence of death.
"On the contrary," replied Athos, "it must be most scrupulously preserved, and I would not give it up for the gold that would cover it in coin."
"And what will she do now?" inquired D'Artagnan.
"Why," said Athos carelessly, "she will probably write to the cardinal that a cursed musketeer named Athos took her safeguard from her by force, and she will, at the same time, advise his eminence to get rid of him, and also of his two friends, Porthos and Aramis. The cardinal will recollect that these are the very men that are always in his way. Then, some fine morning, he will have D'Artagnan arrested, and, that he may not be annoyed by solitude, will send us to keep him company in the Bastille."
"Ah, then," said Porthos, "I think that you are cracking somewhat melancholy jokes."
"I am not joking," replied Athos.
"Do you know," said Porthos, "that I fancy it would be less of a crime to twist this cursed lady's neck than those of these poor devils of Huguenots, who have never committed any greater crime than singing in French the very psalms which we sing in Latin."
"What does the abbé say to that?" quietly asked Athos.
"I say that I am quite of Porthos's opinion."
"And I also," said D'Artagnan.
"Happily she is far away," added Porthos, "for I confess that she would annoy me much here."
"She annoys me in England as well as in France," said Athos.
"She annoys me everywhere," said D'Artagnan. "But when you had her in your power," said Porthos, "why did you not drown, strangle, or hang her? It is only the dead who never return."
"Do you think so, Porthos?" replied Athos, with a dark smile, which D'Artagnan alone could understand.
"I have an idea," said D'Artagnan.
"Let us hear it," cried the musketeers.
"To arms!" exclaimed Grimaud.
The young men arose hastily and ran to their muskets. This time there was a small band advancing, composed of 20 or of 25 men, no longer pioneers, but soldiers of the garrison.
"Suppose we now return to the camp," said Porthos. "It seems to me that the match is not equal."
"Impossible for three reasons," answered Athos. "The first is because we have not finished our breakfast. The second, because we have still some important affairs to talk about. And the third, it wants yet 10 minutes before the hour is elapsed."
"All the same," said Aramis, "we must arrange a plan of battle."
"It is vastly simple," replied Athos. "As soon as the enemy is within musket shot, we must fire. If he continues to advance, we must fire again. In fact, we must blaze away as long as we have guns loaded. If the remnant of the band should then wish to mount to the assault, we must let the besiegers descend as far as the ditch, and then we must heave on their heads a large mass of the wall, which only stays up now by a miracle of equilibrium." "Bravo!" exclaimed Porthos. "Athos, you were undoubtedly born to be a general, and the cardinal, who thinks himself a great warrior, is a mere nothing to you."
"Gentlemen," said Athos, "do not waste your ammunition, I beseech you. Let each pick out his man."
"I've got mine," said D'Artagnan.
"And I mine," said Porthos.
"And I the same," said Aramis.
"Fire!" cried Athos.
The four guns made but one report, and four men fell. The drum then beat, and the little band advanced to the charge. The shots of the four friends were then fired without regularity, but invariably with the same deadly effect. Yet as though they had known the numerical weakness of their opponents, the Rochellois continued to advance at a quick pace. At three other reports, two men fell. Yet the march of those who remained unwounded did not slacken. Having reached the foot of the bastion, there were still 12 or 15 of the enemy. A last discharge received, but did not arrest them. They leaped into the ditch and prepared to scale the breach.
"Now, my friends," said Athos, "let us finish them at one blow. To the wall! To the wall!"
And the four friends, assisted by Grimaud, set themselves to topple over with the barrels of their muskets an enormous mass of wall, which bowed as though the wind waved it, and, loosening itself from its foundation, fell with a tremendous crash into the ditch. A fearful cry was then heard. A cloud of dust ascended toward the skies, and that was all.
"Can we have crushed them all, from the first to the last?" said Athos.
"Faith, it looks very like it," replied D'Artagnan.
"No," said Porthos. "There are two or three of them escaping, quite crippled."
In fact, three or four of these unfortunate beings, covered with mire and blood, fled along the hollow way and regained the town. They were all the survivors of the little band. Athos looked at his watch.
"Gentlemen," said he, "we have been here an hour, and now the wager is gained. But we must be good players. Besides, D'Artagnan has not yet told us his idea."
And the musketeer, with his habitual coolness, seated himself before the remains of the breakfast.
"Would you like to hear my plan?" said D'Artagnan to his three companions, when, after the alarm which had had so fearful a termination for the little troop of Rochellois, the quartet had resumed their places before the remnants of their meal.
"Yes," replied Athos. "You said that you had an idea."
"Ah, I have it!" exclaimed D'Artagnan. "I will go to England for the second time, will find His Grace of Buckingham, and warn him of the plot which has been concocted against his life."
"You will do no such thing, D'Artagnan," said Athos coldly.
"Why not? Did I not go before?"
"Yes, but at that time we were not at war. At that time the Duke of Buckingham was an ally and not an enemy. What you now suggest would amount to treason."
D'Artagnan understood the force of this reasoning and was silent.
"But," said Porthos, "I fancy that I, in my turn, have also got an idea."
"Silence for Monsieur Porthos's idea," cried Aramis.
"I will ask leave of absence of Monsieur de Tréville, on any pretext whatsoever that you can suggest. I'm not very clever at excuses myself. The lady does not know me. I will get near her without exciting her alarm, and, when I have found the beauty, I will strangle her."
"Ah," said Athos, "I am really somewhat disposed to adopt Porthos's idea."
"Fie, then," exclaimed Aramis. "Kill a woman? No. Listen, I have the right idea."
"Let us have your idea, Aramis," said Athos, who felt much deference for the young musketeer.
"We must announce it to the queen."
"Ah, faith, yes," cried D'Artagnan and Porthos together. "I believe that we have found the true course at last."
"Announce it to the queen," said Athos. "And how can we do that? Have we any friends at court? Can we send anyone to Paris without its being known in the camp? There are 140 leagues between here and Paris, and our letter will not have reached Angers before we ourselves shall be in a dungeon."
"As for getting a letter safely delivered to the queen," said Aramis, blushing, "I myself will undertake it. I know a very skillful person at Tours."
Aramis stopped on seeing Athos smile.
"Well, will you not adopt this plan, Athos?" inquired D'Artagnan.
"I do not entirely reject it," replied Athos, "but I would merely observe to Aramis that he cannot himself leave the camp, and that with anybody but one of ourselves, there will be no security that 2 hours after the messenger has started, all the Capuchins, all the Alguazils, all the black bonnets of the Cardinal will not know your letter by heart, and that you and your very skilful person will not be immediately arrested.
Without calculating, added Porthos, that the Queen would save the Duke of Buckingham while leaving us to our fate.
Gentlemen, said D'Artagnan, Porthos's objection is full of sense.
Ah, what is going on in the town? Said Athos. They are beating to arms.
The four friends listened, and the sound of the tattoo reached their ears.
You will see, continued Athos, that they will send an entire regiment against us.
You do not expect to hold your ground against an entire regiment, said Porthos.
Why not? Replied the musketeer.
I feel myself in the humour, and would hold it against an army if we had only had the precaution to bring a dozen bottles more.
Upon my word, the drum comes nearer, said D'Artagnan.
Let it come, replied Athos. There is a quarter of an hour's march between the town and this place. It is more time than we shall require to arrange our plans. If we go away from here, we shall never again find such a convenient spot. And listen, gentlemen, the very idea has come into my mind.
Let us hear it.
Athos made a sign for his valet to come to him.
Grimaud, said Athos, pointing to the dead bodies which lay in the bastion, you will take these gentlemen, fix them upright against the wall, put their hats on their heads, and place their muskets in their hands.
Oh, great man! Cried D'Artagnan. I understand you!
You understand him? Said Porthos.
And you, Grimaud, do you understand? Inquired Aramis. Grimaud gave a sign in the affirmative.
It is all that is necessary, said Athos. Now, let us return to my idea.
I should like, however, to understand as well, said Porthos.
It is of no use.
Yes, the idea of Athos, said D'Artagnan and Aramis at the same time.
This lady, this woman, this creature, this demon, has a brother-in-law, I think you told me.
Yes, I even know him, and I believe that he has no great sympathy with his sister-in-law.
There is no harm there, replied Athos, and if he detested her even, it would be so much the better.
In that case, we are fitted to a nicety.
Nevertheless, said Porthos, I should like to understand what Grimaud is about.
Silence, Porthos, cried Aramis. What is the name of this brother-in-law?
Lord de Winter.
Where is he at present?
He returned to London on the first report of the war.
Well, there is exactly the man we want, said Athos. It is to him that we must give information. We must let him know that his sister-in-law is going to assassinate someone, and entreat him to keep his eye upon her. There must be in London, I should hope, some establishment like the Madelonnette or the Magdalene. He must place his sister-in-law there, and we shall then be at peace.
Yes, said D'Artagnan,
until she gets out again.
Ah, faith, said Athos. You ask too much, D'Artagnan. I have given you all that I have, and I tell you that my budget is now empty.
I think it the best plan we can devise, observed Aramis. We will inform the Queen and Lord de Winter at the same time.
But by whom shall we convey the one letter to London and the other to Tours?
I answer for Bazin, replied Aramis.
And I for Planchet, added D'Artagnan.
In fact, said Porthos, if we cannot leave the camp, our lackeys can.
Certainly, added Aramis. So we will write the letters this very day, give them some money, and send them on the journey.
We will give them some money, said Athos. Then you have got money, have you?
The four friends looked at each other, and a cloud passed over the brows which had been for an instant brightened.
Attention! Cried D'Artagnan. I see black and red points in motion below there. What were you saying about a regiment, Athos? It is a regular army.
Faith, yes, replied Athos. There they are. Do you see the crafty fellows who are advancing without drum or trumpet?
Ah, have you finished, Grimaud?
Grimaud gave a sign in the affirmative, and pointed to a dozen dead bodies, which he had placed in the most picturesque attitudes, some carrying arms, others seeming to take aim, others sword in hand.
Bravo! Cried Athos. That does credit to your imagination.
That may be,
said Porthos, "and yet I should like to understand it."
"Let us decamp first," said D'Artagnan. "You will understand afterwards. One moment, gentlemen. Wait one moment. Let us give Grimaud time to take away the breakfast things."
"Ah," said Aramis, "here are the black and red points becoming visible larger. And I am of D'Artagnan's opinion. I believe that we have no time to lose in regaining the camp."
"Faith," said Athos, "I have nothing more to say against a retreat. We betted for an hour, and we have remained an hour and a half. There is nothing more to communicate. So let us be off, gentlemen, let us be off."
Grimaud had already commenced his retreat, with the basket and the fragments. The four friends followed behind him, and had taken about a dozen steps when—
"Ah! What the plague are we about, gentlemen?" exclaimed Athos.
"Have you forgotten anything?" inquired Aramis.
"The flag! Zounds, we must not leave a flag in the hands of the enemy, even though it be a napkin."
And Athos rushed back into the bastion, mounted the platform, and took down the flag. But as the Rochellois had come within musket shot, they opened a sharp fire upon this man, who thus exposed himself, as if for amusement, to their discharge. It might have been fancied, however, that Athos bore a charmed life. The bullets whistled around him, yet he stood unharmed. Athos waved his standard and bowed towards the camp as he turned his back on the town. Loud shouts resounded on both sides, shouts of anger from the one, and from the other, of enthusiasm. A second discharge soon followed the first, and three balls, by passing through the napkin, made a regular standard of it. They heard the whole camp exclaiming, "Come down! Come down!" Athos slowly descended. His companions, who waited for him with anxiety, welcomed his reappearance with joy.
"Come along, Athos, come along!" said D'Artagnan. "Let us make haste. Now that we have found everything except money, it would be absurd to get killed."
But Athos persisted in his majestic walk, and his companions, finding all remonstrance useless, regulated their pace by his. Grimaud and his basket had formed the advance guard, and were both soon out of range. After a minute or two, the quartet heard the sound of furious firing.
"What is that?" asked Porthos. "At what are they firing? I do not hear the bullets whistle, nor do I see anybody."
"They are firing at our dead men," replied Athos.
"But our dead men will not return their fire."
"Exactly so. They will then believe that there is an ambuscade. They will deliberate, and will afterwards reconnoitre. And by the time they discover the trick, we shall be beyond the reach of their fire. Thus, you see, it is unnecessary to give ourselves a fit of the pleurisy by over-haste."
"Oh, I understand now," said the astonished Porthos.
"That's very fortunate," replied Athos, shrugging his shoulders.
At length a fresh volley was heard, and this time the bullets were actually flattened on the stones around the four friends, and whistled mournfully about their ears. The Rochellois had at last taken possession of the bastion.
"They are a set of awkward fellows," remarked Athos.
"How many of them have we shot? A dozen?
Or 15?
How many did we crush?
8 or 10?
And in exchange for this, we have not got a scratch."
"Ah, yes, though. What is the matter with your hand there, D'Artagnan? It bleeds, I think."
"It is nothing," replied D'Artagnan.
"Was it a spent ball?"
"No."
"What then?"
We have said that Athos loved D'Artagnan as his own son, and though of a gloomy and inflexible character, he sometimes manifested towards the young man a solicitude truly paternal.
"Merely a scratch," replied D'Artagnan. "I caught my fingers between two stones, that of the wall and that of my ring, and the skin is broken."
"See what it is to wear diamonds, my master," said Athos contemptuously.
"Ah!" exclaimed Porthos. "There is a diamond, in fact. And why the plague, then, as there is a diamond, do we complain of having no money?"
"See there now," said Aramis.
"Well done, Porthos. This time you really have got an idea."
"Certainly," continued Porthos, bridling up at Athos's compliment. "And since there is a diamond, let us sell it."
"But," said D'Artagnan, "it is the Queen's diamond."
"All the more reason," said Athos. "The Queen saving the Duke of Buckingham, her lover. Nothing can be more just. The Queen saving us, her friends.
Nothing can be more moral. Let us sell the diamond. What does the abbé say? I do not ask Porthos's opinion. That is already given.
Why, I think, said Aramis, blushing, that as the ring does not come from a mistress, and consequently is not a love token, D'Artagnan may sell it.
My dear fellow, you speak like theology personified. So your advice is
to sell the diamond, replied Aramis.
Well, said D'Artagnan gaily, let us sell the diamond and say no more about it.
The fusillade still continued, but the friends were beyond its range, and the Rochellois seemed to be firing only for the satisfaction of their own consciences.
Faith, said Athos, it was quite time for this idea of Porthos's to present itself, for here we are at the camp. So now, gentlemen, not another word about this business. We are observed. They are coming to meet us, and we shall be borne home in triumph.
In fact, as we have already said, the whole camp was in commotion. More than 2,000 persons had witnessed, as at a theatre, the fortunate bravado of the four friends, a bravado of which they had been far from suspecting the true motive. Nothing could be heard but cries of, "Long live the guards! Long live the musketeers!" Monsieur de Busigny was the first who came to press the hand of Athos, and to confess that he had lost his bet. The dragoon and the Swiss had followed him, and all their comrades had followed the dragoon and the Swiss. There was no end to the congratulations, shaking of hands, embraces, and inextinguishable laughter at the Rochellois. And at last the tumult was so great that the cardinal supposed there was a mutiny, and sent La Houdinière, the captain of his guards, to ascertain the cause of the disturbance. The circumstance was related to his messenger with all the warmth of enthusiasm.
"Well?" demanded the cardinal, when he saw La Houdinière.
"Well, my lord," replied the latter, "it is three musketeers and a guardsman who laid a wager with Monsieur de Busigny to go and breakfast in the bastion of Saint-Gervais, and who, whilst at breakfast, maintained their ground for 2 hours against the Rochellois and killed I know not how many of the enemy."
"Did you learn the names of these musketeers?"
"Yes, my lord."
"What are they?"
"Monsieur Athos, Porthos, and Aramis."
"Always my three brave fellows," muttered the cardinal. "And the guardsman?"
"Monsieur D'Artagnan."
"My young madcap again. Decidedly, these four men must be mine."
On the same evening, the cardinal spoke to Monsieur de Treville of the exploit, which formed the subject of conversation throughout the whole camp. Monsieur de Treville, who had heard the recital of the adventure from the lips of those who were its heroes, recounted it in all its particulars to his eminence, without forgetting the episode of the napkin.
"Very good, Monsieur de Treville," said the cardinal. "Give me this napkin, I beg of you. I will get 3 fleur-de-lis embroidered on it in gold, and will give it to you as a standard for your company."
"My lord," said Monsieur de Treville, "that would be unjust towards the guards. Monsieur d'Artagnan does not belong to me, but to Monsieur de Cessart."
"Well, then, take him," said the cardinal. "It is not fair that these four brave soldiers, who love each other so much, should not serve in the same company."
On the same evening, Monsieur de Treville announced this good news to the three musketeers and to D'Artagnan, inviting them to breakfast with him on the morrow. D'Artagnan could not contain himself for joy. We know that the dream of his whole life had been to be a musketeer. The three friends were also much delighted.
"Faith," said D'Artagnan to Athos, "yours was a triumphant idea, and as you said, we have gained glory by it, besides being able to hold a conversation of the greatest importance,
which we may henceforth renew without suspicion, for, with God's help, we shall henceforth be regarded as cardinalists."
On the same evening D'Artagnan went to pay his respects to Monsieur des Essarts, and to inform him of his promotion. Monsieur des Essarts, who had great affection for D'Artagnan, offered him any assistance that he might require, as this change of regiment brought with it new expenses of equipment. D'Artagnan declined this assistance, but thinking the opportunity a good one, requested him to ascertain the value of the diamond, which he placed in his hands, stating that he wished to turn it into money. At 8 o'clock the next morning, Monsieur des Essarts's valet came to D'Artagnan and handed to him a bag containing 7,000 livres in gold.
It was the price of the Queen's diamond. 48. A Family Affair. Athos had found the right expression. It was necessary to call Buckingham's a family affair. A family affair was not subject to the investigation of the cardinal. A family affair concerned no one. They might occupy themselves before all the world with a family affair. Aramis had found the idea, the valets. Porthos had found the means, the diamond. D'Artagnan alone, generally the most inventive of the four, had found nothing. But we must also confess that the very name of her ladyship paralyzed him. Yet we are mistaken. He had found a purchaser of the diamond. The breakfast at Monsieur de Treville's was charmingly gay. D'Artagnan had already got his uniform. As he was about the same size as Aramis, and as Aramis being so handsomely paid, as may be remembered, by the bookseller who had bought his poem, had furnished himself with everything in duplicate, he had accommodated his friend with a complete equipment. D'Artagnan would have been completely happy had he not seen her ladyship like a dark cloud on the horizon. After the breakfast, they agreed to meet again in the evening at Athos's quarters, in order to terminate their arrangements. D'Artagnan passed the day in displaying his musketeer's uniform in every avenue throughout the camp. At the appointed time in the evening, the four friends assembled. There were but three things left to decide: what they should write to the lady's brother-in-law, what they should write to the clever person at Tours, and which of the valets should be the bearer of the letters. For the latter purpose, each offered his own. Athos vaunted the discretion of Grimaud, who only spoke when his master permitted him to open his mouth. Porthos boasted of the strength of Mousqueton, who was big enough to drub four men of ordinary dimensions. Aramis, confident in the cunning of Bazin, made a pompous eulogium on his candidate. And lastly, D'Artagnan had entire dependence in Planchet's bravery, and recalled to their minds how well he had behaved in their most hazardous encounter at Calais. These four virtues for a long time contended for the mastery, and gave occasion for some magnificent speeches, which we shall not report, lest they should be deemed tiresome. "Unhappily," said Athos, "it is necessary that he whom we send should possess in himself all the four qualities united. But where can we find such a servant?" "It is impossible, I know," said Athos. "So take Grimaud." "Take Mousqueton." "Take Bazin." "Take Planchet. He is frank and skillful, so there are two qualities out of the four." "Gentlemen," said Aramis, "the chief thing is not to know which of our four valets is the most discreet, the strongest, the most cunning, or the bravest, but to find out which of them is the most fond of money." "What Aramis says is full of sense," said Athos. "It is necessary to calculate upon the defects of mankind, and not upon their virtues. Monsieur Abbé, you are a great moralist."
"Unquestionably so," said Aramis, "for we need to be well served, not only to succeed, but not to fail. Since, in case of failure, it will endanger the head, not of the valet."
"Not so loud, Aramis," said Athos.
"You are right. Not of the valet," resumed Aramis, "but of the master, or even of the masters. Are our valets sufficiently devoted to us to hazard their lives for us?"
"No." "Faith," said D'Artagnan, "I would almost answer for Planchet."
"Well then, my dear friend, add to that devotion a good round sum, which will secure him some independence, and instead of answering for him once, you may answer twice."
"Ah, good God, you will be deceived just as much," said Athos, who was an optimist in reasoning on things, and a pessimist when reasoning on men. "They will promise everything to get money, and when the occasion comes, fear will prevent their acting. Once taken, they will be imprisoned, and once imprisoned, they will confess everything. What the plague! We are not children!" "To get to England," Athos lowered his voice, "one must pass through the whole of France, which is thickly sown with the spies and creatures of the cardinal. Then a passport is necessary for embarkation. Then English must be spoken to find the way to London. Ah, I see that it is a very difficult affair."
"Not at all," said D'Artagnan, who was very anxious that the thing should be accomplished.
"I can see that it is easy enough. We know, without being told, vive Dieu,
that if we wrote to Lord de Winter, loudly proclaiming all manner of enormities concerning the Cardinal—"
"Not so loud," said Athos.
"Or communicating state secrets and intrigues," continued D'Artagnan, profiting by his friend's warning. "We know, without being told, that we should all be broken on the wheel. But for God's sake, do not forget what you have said yourself, Athos, that we only write about a family affair, that we write with the sole motive of getting this lady, as soon as she arrives in London, placed in such a situation that she cannot injure us. I would therefore write him a letter in something like these terms."
"Now let us hear," said Aramis, putting on a critical face beforehand.
"Sir and dear friend—"
"Ah, yes, dear friend to an Englishman," broke in Athos.
"That's a good start. Bravo, D'Artagnan! For that word alone you will be quartered instead of broken on the wheel."
"Well, then, I would say, sir, quite short."
"You might even say, my lord," rejoined Athos, who thought a good deal of the proprieties.
"My lord, do you remember the little enclosure for goats near the Luxembourg?"
"Good, the Luxembourg indeed. That will be taken for an allusion to the Queen Mother. How very ingenious," said Athos.
"Well, then, we will simply say, my lord, do you remember a certain little enclosure where your life was spared?"
"My dear D'Artagnan," said Athos, "you will never be anything but a vastly bad composer. Where your life was spared, for shame! It is not dignified. No one reminds a gallant man of such services. A benefit cast up is always an insult."
"Ah, my dear fellow," said D'Artagnan, "you are unbearable, and if one must write under your critical eye, I renounce the task."
"And you do wisely. Handle the sword and the musket, my dear boy. You perform those exercises admirably well. But give up the pen to the abbé. It is his vocation."
"Yes," said Porthos. "Give up the pen to Aramis, who writes theses in Latin."
"Very well, so be it," answered D'Artagnan. "Compose this note for us, Aramis. But by our holy father the Pope, mind what you are about, for I shall pluck you in turn, I warn you."
"I ask nothing better," said Aramis, with that natural confidence which every poet has in himself. "But first make me acquainted with all the circumstances. I have indeed heard, now and then, that his sister-in-law is a minx. I have, in fact, got proof of it by listening to her conversation with the Cardinal."
"Zounds, not so loud, then!" cried Athos.
"But," continued Aramis, "the particulars I do not know."
"Nor I either," said Porthos.
D'Artagnan and Athos looked at one another for some time in silence. At last Athos, having collected himself, and become even paler than usual, gave a sign of assent, and D'Artagnan understood that he might speak.
"Well, then, here is what you must write," resumed D'Artagnan. "My lord, your sister-in-law is a wicked woman who wished to have you killed in order to obtain your inheritance. But she could not marry your brother, being already married in France, and having been—" D'Artagnan stopped, as if he was seeking for the right word, and looked at Athos.
"Driven away by her husband," dictated Athos.
"Because she had been branded," continued D'Artagnan.
"Bah!" cried Porthos. "Impossible! And did she wish to have her brother-in-law killed?"
"Yes. And she was really married?" demanded Aramis.
"Yes."
"And her husband found out that she had a fleur-de-lis on her shoulder?" cried Porthos.
"Yes."
3 times had Athos uttered this "yes," each time in a more gloomy tone.
"And who saw this fleur-de-lis?" demanded Aramis.
"D'Artagnan and myself, or rather, to observe the chronological order, I and D'Artagnan," replied Athos.
"And the husband of this horrible creature is yet alive?" inquired Aramis.
"Yes."
"You are quite sure of it?"
There was a moment of profound silence, during which each felt himself affected according to his disposition.
"This time," said Athos, first breaking silence, "D'Artagnan has given us a good start, and it is that which we must write first."
"The devil!" said Aramis. "You are quite right, Athos, and the composition is difficult. The Chancellor himself would be at a loss to compose an epistle of this significancy,
And yet the Chancellor draws up a criminal process very agreeably. Never mind. Be quiet. I will write.
Aramis took a pen, reflected for a few moments, and then wrote 8 or 10 lines in a charming little feminine hand. Then, in a soft and slow voice, as if every word had been scrupulously weighed, he read what follows.
My lord, the person who writes these few lines had the honour of crossing swords with you in a little enclosure in the Rue de l'Enfer. As you have been kind enough since, often to declare yourself the friend of that person, he is bound to reciprocate that friendship by an important warning. You have twice escaped being the victim of a near relation, whom you consider your heiress, because you know not that, before contracting her marriage in England, she had been already married in France. But the third time, which is now, you might become her victim. Your relation has left La Rochelle for England. Watch for her arrival, for she has great and terrible designs. If you wish really to know of what she is capable, read her past history on her left shoulder.
Well, that is admirable, said Athos. And you have the pen of a Secretary of State, my dear Aramis. De Winter will keep a good lookout now, provided he receives the letter. And should it ever fall into the hands of His Eminence, we could not be compromised. But as the valet whom we send might make us believe that he had been to London whilst he only stopped at Châtellerault, give him only half the sum, promising him the other half on receipt of the answer. Have you the diamond? Continued Athos.
I have better than that, replied D'Artagnan. I have got the money. And he threw the bag upon the table.
At the sound of the gold, Aramis lifted up his eyes, Porthos started, and as for Athos, he remained unmoved.
How much is there in this little bag? Said he.
7,000 livres, in 12-franc pieces.
7,000 livres! Exclaimed Porthos. Was that paltry little diamond worth 7,000 livres?
So it seems, said Athos, since there they are. I presume that our friend D'Artagnan has not put in any on his own account.
But, gentlemen, continued D'Artagnan, we forget the Queen. Let us take some little care of the health of her dear Buckingham. It is the least that we owe her.
That is true, said Athos. But this concerns Aramis.
Well, inquired the latter, colouring, what must I do?
Why, replied Athos, it is very simple. Just compose a second letter to that clever person who lives at Tours.
Aramis resumed the pen, began to reflect again, and wrote the following lines, which he submitted immediately to the approbation of his friends.
My dear cousin.
Ah, ha! Said Athos. This clever person is your relation.
Cousin German, replied Aramis.
Practically cousin.
Aramis continued.
My dear cousin, His Eminence the Cardinal, whom may God preserve for the happiness of France, and the confusion of the enemies of the realm, is about to exterminate the rebellious heretics of La Rochelle. It is probable that the aid of the English fleet will not even arrive in time within sight of the place. I might almost venture to say that His Grace of Buckingham will even be prevented from leaving England by some great event. His Eminence is the most illustrious politician of time past, time present, and most probably of time to come. He would extinguish the sun if the sun were in his way. Give this happy intelligence to your sister, my dear cousin. I dreamed that this cursed Englishman was dead. I do not remember whether it was by poison or the sword, only I am sure that he was dead. And you know that my dreams are always fulfilled. Be assured, therefore, that you will shortly see me return.
Wonderfully good, said Athos. You are the king of poets, my dear Aramis. You are eloquent as the apocalypse, yet are as true as the gospel. There only remains now the address to put upon this letter.
That is easy enough, said Aramis.
He folded the letter in a coquettish manner and wrote,
Mademoiselle Michon, seamstress at Tours.
The three friends looked at each other and laughed. They were caught.
"Now, gentlemen," said Aramis, "you understand that Bazin alone can convey this letter to Tours. My cousin only knows Bazin, and will trust no one else. To send any other messenger would only ensure a failure. Besides, Bazin is ambitious and learned. Bazin has read history, gentlemen. He knows that Sixtus V became pope after having herded swine."